everybody, and welcome to episode 11 of In Their Own League podcast. I hope you're all doing well in these difficult times. If you're wondering why my British accent has disappeared and somehow came up with an American one, it's because I am not the film B. I am Rosa. I am the assistant editor of In Their Own League website, and I am happy and thrilled to have a couple of guests with me today to talk about LGBTQ cinema. My first guest, she is a writer for In Their Own League. I had the pleasure of meeting her on the screening of The Invisible Man, which sadly happened to be the last time I was in the movie theater after all the craziness began. Please help me welcome Sophia. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm doing good. I actually was trying to think if that was the last movie I saw, and I think that was actually the last movie I saw with you. Yep.
Oh man. Yeah, it was a pleasure actually meeting you. And then unfortunately all this that's been going on, it's been a bit rough.
Yes,
but thank you. Was. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, it's my pleasure.
And lastly, our second guest is a guy I am a huge fan of. I am internally geeking out. He is the creator and host of his YouTube channel, LC Screen Talk. Please help me welcome Larry. Thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
Oh, well, thank you so much for that really flattering intro. I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk about some LGBTQ-related cinema.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. You have no idea how much I appreciate this.
Thank you,
both of you, for joining me.
Of course.
And as I previously mentioned, we're here to talk about LGBTQ cinema, some of our personal favorite films or films we think are worth recommending. And what we're going to be doing, we're going to be probably each one of us will select three films. We'll just be going around and then we'll just be talking about one film each. And then if we've seen the film that you're recommending or such, then we'll probably just talk about it and go on from there. Mm-hmm. Sounds good?
Sounds great.
Perfect.
All right. So I'm going to give the floor to Sophia.
Just joking.
What's your first film?
So I've been thinking about it a lot for the previous 2 days. And I've been trying to think what is my ultimate favorite LGBTQ plus film. And I must say, I think it's Carol, which is directed by Todd Haynes. I know the movie received a 10-minute standing ovation in Cannes Film Festival, and I actually didn't watch it when it came out. I actually watched it like two years after it came out. But I think that movie shook me the most. I think it's because it was so hard to see the issues of homosexuality in the 50s. And there's also the problem of the age gap between the main characters, which is Carol and Therese. Carol is portrayed by Kate Blanchett. Therese is portrayed by Rooney Mara. I think that is still my ultimate favorite film of all.
Nice. I unfortunately have not seen this film. I've heard so much about it.
No.
I'm shocked right now. I am so embarrassed. You have no idea how embarrassed I am. But yes, I've heard a lot about it. It's definitely on my to-do list. How about you, Larry?
I love Carol. I think it's like it's one of those on my list that's like nearly perfect. I don't think there's many ways that I could see to really improve Carol. You have great performances from both Kate Blanchett, Rooney Mara, and I think Kyle Chandler is also strong in the film as well. And I like films like that, or Disobedience kind of deals a little bit in the same arena, where you can empathize with the husband character to a point as well, but it doesn't take away from the main romance and the main feelings. And Rooney Mara and Kate Blanchett have great chemistry too. It's a great film and beautiful. Oh, the cinematography is so amazing.
Yes, I love the outfits. I love the style. I'm a big fan of like fifties. So it was and the most important thing for me that it has a happy ending, because sadly, now there's more and more LGBTQ movies with a happy ending, but at that time it was just starting to be. So I was so happy to see that this movie actually had a happy ending, and that was just one of the major things to me too, for me too.
Oh my god, I am okay. You both just sold this thing to me. I'm watching this after we're done with this episode. Oh my god, I'm so ashamed I haven't seen this.
You still can catch up.
Which is why we're doing this podcast. Yes, okay.
Yay.
Larry, we go on to you. What's your first film?
Yeah, so it's so difficult because there's so many that I love so much. So kind of dwindling a list down. If I were to pick probably my favorite, it's one that has gotten maybe some kickback and I know is a bit controversial, but it still just hits home for me on a personal level. And my favorite is probably Call Me By Your Name, which was directed by Luca Guadagnino, starring Timothy Chalamet and Armie Hammer. Came out just a couple of years ago, a Best Picture nominee, which also, if I just want to harken back to Carol, was robbed of a Best Picture nominee. I'm still not quite over how robbed Carol was at the Oscars.
Yes.
but I just find Call Me By Your Name to be a really beautiful film. Of course, it has that controversy, again, with an age gap, which is something that is somewhat prevalent in LGBTQ films, is this age gap. But, you know, I quickly got over that because I, too, had some reservations because as someone coming from the LGBTQ community, particularly the male side of it, there's often this predatory stigma or stereotype that gets put onto the community. So I'm really hesitant whenever I'm going into a film that I think might exasperate that or reinforce it. But the movie just handles it all so well. I think the chemistry between Armie and Timothy is amazing. And it's just a gorgeous film. It's another one like Carol that for me, I really find trouble even looking at negatives. The cinematography, again, is stunning. Oh, it's just so beautifully shot. The score and the original music is amazing. I just love it.
I actually have not seen that. So that's another one. That's on my list.
Surprise, surprise. I have seen this movie. Yay. You know what? I could not agree with what you just said. I echo every single word you just said. It's a really great film. And yeah, the chemistry between Chalamet and Hammer is just, it felt very raw and genuine to me. It felt like I could have some met these people somewhere. They were just like friends or something. It just felt genuine to me. But yes, it's definitely a great film and very recent as well. So,
and it's a nice like coming of age story for the Timothée Chalamet character of Elio that works really well. Also, it's really nice. I know, again, I think the LGBTQ community had a little bit of a problem with the accepting parents in some of these films because, you know, clearly not all of us received that type of reception. But I really found it refreshing to have these open-minded parents in this movie. That speech from Michael Stolberg is so good. It's like so emotional. And I'm a sucker for a little bit of a sad romance. So the ending of this film really gets me.
Nice. Okay, so I guess it's my turn. My first film is a movie that I watched it a few years ago as part of a festival for female-directed films. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I recall watching a trailer, but never watched the film in theaters. And I am talking about Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. I love this film. I love this film. I adore this film. It's from 2017. It's directed by Angela Robinson. And it takes a look at inventor and psychologist William Martson, who's portrayed by Luke Evans, and his wife Elizabeth, portrayed by Rebecca Hall. They are trying to perfect the lie detector test, and then they meet a young student named Olive, and the three of them just fall in love. And I love the film. It's visually gorgeous, beautiful cinematography. But what I enjoyed most about the film was just how tastefully done it was. The relationship, how it evolved between the three of them. And of course, we're talking about the 40s, so it's not socially accepted. And also, it's very rare to see a film where the main characters are in a polyamorous relationship. So it was just new for me. I loved it. I loved everything about this film.
I actually have not seen that movie. That's also on my list. I know that Anja Robinson, she directed a couple of the episodes of The L Word. And that's how I got to know her. So I actually am curious about that movie. And I love Rebecca Hall. I love her. So I will definitely have that on my list.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought it up because I also love Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. I think it was just outside of my top 10 for that year. I mean, I really loved it. And talk about another robbery. Rebecca Hall should have been in the thick of the race for Best Supporting Actress. She's so good in this movie. I think everybody who's into Wonder Woman at large should really watch this because it's interesting to get that extra insight. I knew quite a bit about the creation of Wonder Woman as a comic series, but it's just so interesting to get that backstory about, all of the innuendos that were actually quite overt in the early Wonder Woman comic books. But this is just a celebration of sexuality in so many ways. And it's really cool, cool to see that polyamory on screen. And it's really cool to see kind of a bisexual dynamic because we don't have a bisexual representation. Usually they kind of try to pigeonhole people into one side or the other in the box.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. Yes. That's another reason why I love this film. I mean, I'm openly, I'm bisexual. So there's not that many films out there that showcase the relationship. And unfortunately, I feel this film was very, it was underlooked because it came out the same year as Wonder Woman. But yes, it's definitely a movie worth watching. I love this film. All right, Sophia, what's your second film?
So I've been thinking about it right now very, very hard. And I think that's the movie that just, it was praised everywhere, which is Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I was so upset that I haven't not watched it earlier. I just watched it when it came to Hulu. But I fell in love in that movie. The main actresses, I'm sorry, my French will be really bad because I don't know any French. So, the main actress, which is Noémie Merlant and Adèle Haenel, they were absolutely stunning. And the chemistry between the characters was so amazing. And I love how they fell in love while they were creating something. There's such a thin line between attraction and inspiration, and it's so apparent in this film. I love that film. I absolutely love that. And the scenes and the direction of Celine Sciamma, oh my God, that's like in my top 10 for sure.
It was my favorite film of last year. And
mine too.
Yes. Woo. I think you and I had the same top two films of last year.
Yeah, we did.
You see. Love it. Yes, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Oh my God. I love that film. I watched it on I received a screener for it, and then I was able to go to the movie theater and watch it then. Oh my God, it's just, I know you're not supposed to call a film a masterpiece, like, once it's been released so early, but to me, that's like filmmaking at its best.
Yes.
The acting, it's phenomenal. Screenplay, it's directed beautifully. Cinematography, it's gorgeous, and I'm a big sucker for period pieces. So this is just everything combined for me. So, and yes, the relationship between the two main characters, it was
amazing.
Phenomenal. And yes, phenomenal, amazing. I loved it. And those last 20 minutes, oh my God. Perhaps one of the most moving and impactful 20 minutes of any film that I've seen. But yes, thank you for bringing it up.
Oh, yeah.
I was hoping it'd come up.
I saw that one at the Denver Film Festival last, like, November. Debuted here. And then as soon as it opened in theaters in February of this year, I, like, grabbed my friends. And I was like, we have to go watch this. And it went out the first weekend it was available again. It was such a difficult stretch going from November to February. I was like, oh, my gosh, I just want people to watch this movie and see it and experience it. Because I kept putting it on my list. And, you know, we did a voting on a podcast I'm a part of, and I was voting for it every time and trying to get it nominated, but nobody else has seen it. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm dying. But talk about another robbery. So many robberies.
Oh, yes.
Yes!
I don't know how this wasn't the French nominee for Best Foreign Picture. I mean, I don't think it would have won. Parasite was an unstoppable juggernaut.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I wish it at least had got
that
nomination. But cinematography, I mean, come on. I was like, this was, how did it get snubbed? I don't know. But it just, now I kind of wish they had pushed it back to a 2020 release, because the competition is going to be so slight this year. Oh, I'm like, yeah. It could have done so well at the Oscars for 2020. But it's pretty much perfect. There's very little I could see improving this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Larry, next film.
So my next film is actually a documentary from 1990, and it is Paris is Burning, which is directed by Jenny Livingston. And it basically is a documentary that goes with this group of people and educates the masses, if you will, on the ballroom scene in New York particularly, and just giving the history of what ballroom is, and you get to experience life through these drag queens, through these trans women particularly, as well as others who just want to express themselves, who aren't even necessarily in drag, but are part of the voguing scene and all of that, dating back to the 60s. And what I think is so great about Paris is Burning is, one, it's just very educational about the culture. So I think, obviously, if you're in the LGBTQ community, definitely make sure to check this one out. But it really shows how influential, particularly Black LGBT community has been to our culture at large. So many sayings that are ubiquitous now, ubiquitous? Oh my gosh, I can't talk! culture, like reading you or read you to filth or all of these sassy terms, they got started really in the Black ballroom scene, and voguing got started in the Black ballroom scene. So it's really interesting to see how our culture has really impacted greater culture at large. So it's a really moving documentary. It's a female directed LGBTQ documentary, and I think it's definitely worth checking out.
Oh, I think I have to check it out. I've been watching a lot of documentaries recently. I'm just trying to watch as many as I can because it's so interesting.
Yeah.
So I'll definitely check this one out for sure.
What's the name of it again? Because I don't think I've seen it.
Paris is Burning. And I think you can I think it's free on YouTube right now. So it's definitely one.
Oh.
It's an easy one to find. Also, the resources are there. It's a great one. Here in the UK, it's also on UK Netflix, Paris is Burning.
Yes.
It was on US Netflix, but I think it's been removed since, so.
Mm-hmm.
It's been done, so my second film, it's a film I recently watched. I watched a few weeks ago as a part of, I'm currently working on my film degree, so taking a film course, and I was asked to watch this film. I can understand why. I love this film. It's been on my head ever since I watched it, and it's 2011's Pariah, directed by Dee Reese. oh my God, this film. It's so good. I was able to relate a lot to this film. And what the trend that I've been noticing about LGBTQ films out there, and it's funny that you just mentioned it with the documentary, Larry, is that there isn't a lot of people of color in these films. So to watch Pariah and to see that the lead actress is Black and see the difficulty she had to go through. So pretty much it's a coming out story, and she's trying to still discover her sexuality. She knows who she is, but she's still trying to figure herself out. But at the same time, she doesn't want to come out to her parents, who are extremely conservative. And oh my God, this film, that ending made me cry. It's not, I'm sorry, I'm just going to spoil this. It's not a happy ending film.
Oh,
and,
no.
Yeah, it's not. And I think that's what made it more impactful to me, that it was unfortunately very realistic and very relatable to me, because I experienced a lot of what she did when she came out to her parents, and it was just very, unfortunately, it brought back a lot of painful memories. But that's what makes this film very good. It makes it an amazing film that I was able to relate to it, and it's certainly Dee Reese, man, she nailed this film. It's an amazing, amazing film. Highly recommend watching it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. It's gonna be definitely on my list.
And it's certainly such a special film coming from Dee Reese as a Black filmmaker, a Black director and writer, yes, who also is part of the LGBTQ community.
Correct.
So, you know, it's always great to get that perspective, because as we're talking about, you know, I think unfortunately in film and within the community at large, a lot of that history with people of color, it has been somewhat forgotten, I think, or is often mm-hmm. not talked about as much as it should be, especially amongst, you know, current events. And it's great to see Dee Reese, you know, telling a personal story like this through the art of film.
Yeah, I agree. Sophia, your turn.
Yay! Okay, that's my third film. So my third film that impacted me like the most as well, it was Moonlight, of course.
Yay.
By Barry Jenkins. It was such a heartbreaking, but in the same time, a coming of age story. And I think the most touching part in that movie was for me the relationship between the character of Trevante Rhodes and Mahershala Ali. Their bond was so strong. It was so beautiful to me. And I remember the first time I watched that movie, it took me the second time to watch it to finally, like, embrace it all. And that's why I decided that it's my third favorite LGBTQ+ movie.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you on that one. The first time I kind of just sat in it for a minute, and then I definitely was like, I need to watch this again. There was a lot to unpack for me watching Moonlight. And of course, there's something so universal in Moonlight, just kind of with the bullying and the self-realization that comes through Moonlight that I think is relatable, obviously within the community, but even it stretches outside of the LGBTQ community. And it's not so overt necessarily either in this film. It's a really subtle take from Barry Jenkins. Oh, the cinematography in this film, though. Oh, it was absolutely stunning.
Yes.
Naomi Harris. Oh, what a performance she gave as well. I think she's so good as his mother in this movie. Janelle Monáe, too. I think she's really fantastic in this movie, and oftentimes I think kind of goes overlooked. So Moonlight, one of my favorite Best Picture, if not my favorite Best Picture winner of this past decade.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, another disappointment.
Have you seen it?
Like it. No.
Oh my, Rosie. Wow. That
okay,
one's
I know.
For me, that one is actually shocking to me.
Yeah, no, I have not. I promise today I will watch these the movies I have on my list, so I won't feel more of a failure than I do at this moment.
Hey, but I mean, I think that's the part of this conversation. You know, we can exchange our films and we can recommend some of our favorites. So I think that that's amazing. And then, you know, at least now that it's really worth watching, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Apparently twice, right?
Yes.
Well, it took me twice. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's one you'll want to revisit after you've watched it that first. Mm-hmm. One of those that kind of sits with you. You mull it over quite a bit after you've watched it, and you're like, okay, I need to watch this again.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. Exactly.
Okay, sounds good. I'll be doing that today. Larry.
So for my third film, I'm going to cheat just a little bit, and I'm going to put two 90s drag-inspired films here, because I couldn't choose on which one I wanted to highlight more. So I'm going to talk about The Birdcage and The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. So it's a twofer as my third spot. So The Birdcage I want to highlight just because I think it's an endlessly rewatchable comedy of the 90s. It is Robin Williams and Nathan Lane, two comedic geniuses at their full force in this movie. It is so hilarious and so much fun while tackling, obviously, some deeper issues. Hank Azaria is in here as this, like, pool cleaning boy, and he is so good and fun. Diane Weist is really hilarious. Really, the entire cast is wonderful, and having to deal with this entire farce of it all, and Nathan Lane tricking these uber-conservative parents into thinking he's an actual woman as a drag queen over dinner is just wonderful. It's one of the most rewatchable films ever for me. I love it. And then Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert is an Australian film that follows a troupe of drag queens as they are going to a gig. And in their bus named Priscilla, they are making their way across like the Australian bush. But this one really delves into a bit of deeper issues than The Birdcage while also still having the big fun moments. I still think this has the best lip syncs of any of the drag films, particularly the final lip sync to Finally by Cece Preston is so amazing and iconic. It's great. But it touches on Terrence Stamp's character, who is a transgender woman, but also a drag performer. It's kind of going back to the roots of drag with Paris is Burning Again. But here, it's something that is often talked about now is trans and just biological women being able to participate in the art of drag. Guy Pearce, oh my gosh, I mean, I don't know if he's ever looked this good again in his career. It's distractingly attractive in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And then we had, oh my gosh, now Hugo Weaving in this film, and he's so good. So these three actors, Terrence Stamp, Hugo Weaving, and Guy Pearce, that you maybe wouldn't associate with a drag film, and they all just knock it out of the park. It's wonderful, and I love both of these movies. So have you all seen
it? I am so glad I invited you on, because I have not seen it either. Oh. And you're just giving me all these recommendations, and I'm loving it.
You all
have loving it.
Birdcage, that's the one I thought maybe you all had seen.
I'm pretty sure I have seen it sometime at my parents' house, but you know, I was younger, so because I can recognize actors and I can recognize the scenes because I was looking through the pictures, and I feel like I've seen it. But then I was younger, so I think I should just rewatch it and. It looks really good.
Nathan Lane just over the top at his just wonderful best in Birdcage. They're just saying I'm not a woman. Yeah, it's great.
Oh man, I haven't seen either one of these, but again, I knew I made a right decision asking you to come on board. Yes, I'm loving this. Those are two awesome choices. Thank you so much. Okay, so I guess it's my turn. And my third film. Oh my God, it is my third film already. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Okay. It's a recent film, of course. Majority of my films are just recent films because my film knowledge isn't the greatest. But it's 2018's Colette, starring Keira Knightley. I very, very, very much enjoyed this film. I was able to watch it in the theater. It was on limited release. And lucky for me, I live in LA, so I'm able to attend a lot of these limited releases. And I love this film a lot. So the character of Keira Knightley, who's Colette, she is married. She marries her husband, Willie. And they move to France after she's been living in a rural area. In a rural area. Oh, wow. So they moved to Paris, and then he somehow convinces her to write for him. So she's very talented and smart, and she starts writing under his name, like ghostwriting pretty much. And she writes a book or a novel that's semi-autobiographical. Oh my God! I can't talk today. I'm sorry. Semi-autobiographical. There we go. Book.
There you go. Woo,
yes. Woo. Got it out. About her, which ends up being a huge success. So then with success comes a lot of greediness, but also knowledge. So eventually she wants ownership of her work. So, of course, it takes place. I'm not entirely sure when it takes place, but it's, of course, back in the day where you don't, women, of course, they're not allowed to write, and they pretty much considered property and so on. So she just goes out there, does her own thing. She tries to claim ownership of her writing. And at the same time, she is, also experimenting with her sexuality, and this is where she starts to see women and so on, and also with fashion. She starts experimenting some fashion things there. So it's a movie I walked out of this film empowered. Like, just I walked out of the theater saying, yeah, I can do anything I set my mind into. Just an empowering film for women. And yeah, highly recommend this film. I'm not sure if a lot of people have seen it or not, but yeah, 2018 Colette, it's a film that I hold dear to my heart.
Yeah, it was.
Anybody not seen it?
No, I actually have not seen it. It's on my list. Okay. I like Keira Knightley. I remember when I was younger, I didn't like her. I don't know what it was. But you know, I recently am growing to her, like, you know. So I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. Colette was, I remember getting the buzz about it, but I actually didn't realize it had LGBTQ themes in it at all, actually. I just remember, I knew it was a Keira Knightley film as soon as you said the name, but it was one of those that just seemed to kind of slip through the cracks for me in 2018.
Yeah, it seems like she's like the queen of period pieces, and she's just in every single period piece. But yes, no, yes, I highly recommend watching this film, definitely. Okay, so any other honorable mentions that you guys just want to talk about? Female directed films or something that just made the cut of the list or something?
I have one. Okay,
sure.
That's a bonus film for me. I bet 100% you have not seen that movie, because that movie, nobody knows that movie ever. So the title of the movie is I Cannot Think Straight. It's the movie from 2008. It's a British romantic drama, and it's directed by Shamim Sarif. And she actually wrote the book first, and then she directed the movie based on her novel. And so the story happens in London. We meet Tala. Tala is Jordanian of Palestinian descent, and she's preparing for her wedding, and she breaks the wedding, so her mother is really upset. And then she meets Layla, who's British Indian. And they fall in love, and of course, you know, the families are not happy, especially Tara's family is not happy, so they have to go through all these obstacles to be together. And it's really, really interesting film. I watched it when I was around 16, so it was like really awakening for me. I really recommend it, and the acting is really good. I love, you know, there's two different cultures, you know, we have two different cultures, so we see that, and I recommend that movie for you guys to watch.
Yeah, I think before I have like just a bullet point list of some impactful ones directed by women, before I get to that one, I think I'd be remiss to not mention Brokeback Mountain, the Ang Lee classic, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger. My favorite thing about that film actually is how open it is with sexuality and that it's about love just generally without really defining things. But it's infamous because it lost to Crash for Best Picture, which was unheard of because it had won all of the precursor awards. But it was just kind of a show of homophobia on the Academy's part back in 2005, I think. But it's a wonderful film. It does not have a happy ending, but still one of the greats. But some of the female-directed films, I just wanted to give a shout-out. One of them is an indie that came out recently called Beach Rats that I think was great. It was directed by Eliza Hitman from 2017, about this young kid, Harris Dickinson, trying to figure out his sexual orientation, his sexuality amongst a hyper toxic masculine environment. Then we have Boys Don't Cry, which I know has maybe a little bit, we have a weird place right now in history about transgender films and that representation. And I think it's because so many transgender films focus on the transitioning part and kind of that identity, that it's really difficult to cast people that are accurate to representation. But Boys Don't Cry was 1999, starring Hilary Swank and directed by Kimberly Pierce. Definitely not a happy film. a really heavy film, but based on a true story, a really powerful film as well. But I'm a Cheerleader was also from 1999.
Oh my God, I love that movie.
Yes, I'm so glad you've seen it. It's like a campy, just really funny, fun, good time that shows the atrocities of conversion therapy, but with the fun lightheartedness. Natasha Lyonne is so good in this movie. I love her. We have everyone from like RuPaul in the movie.
Oh my God, RuPaul is genius in that movie.
This ridiculous, quote unquote, turned straight man. Eddie Cibrian in it. It's all just so over the top and great. It's also similar to Miseducation of Cameron Post, which came out recently and also deals with conversion therapy and is also a female-directed film coming from Desiree Akhavan. But that one's also really good. Chuang Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar is a drag classic. This one has not aged as well, though. That's why it kind of has bumped down. But it is female directed by Biban Kidron, starring Patrick Swayze and Wesley Snipes, as well as John Leguizamo, as three drag queens on a cross-country road trip. And I think it confused the art form of drag and transgender quite a bit, and I think that's where the issues come in from current day, but it's a lot of fun. Some other ones that everyone has seen, Booksmart obviously is great, and is female-directed. Can You Ever Forgive Me from Mariel Heller is fantastic, and also deserves so much love. And another one a lot of other people are enjoying, maybe more than me, is The Half of It, which actually is on Netflix now, and I just appreciated the representation it brought to the screen, both in front of and behind the camera, directed by an Asian lesbian. So yeah, those are my impactful female-directed LGBTQ films.
Amazing. I'm loving this. I thank you so much. You're amazing.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. I think I only had one honorable mention, and it was Disobedience. That was mm-hmm. also another recent film. I think it's 2018 with both Rachels. They're just amazing. Mickey Adams and Weiss. I just really, really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was a well acted out movie, and I understand some of its criticism. But I think as it, how can I word this? I think as an LGBT or a lesbian in this case, relationship, which of course has to go through a lot of hurdles, primarily religion, the Jewish religion. It's a film worth watching, certainly mm-hmm. worth watching. It's well acted. It's, I liked it. It's a 2-hour film. I thought it was shorter. Mm-hmm. Never mind. I thought it was like a 90-minute film. Nope, never mind. But yeah, Disobedience is definitely out there. And yeah, a lot of what Larry mentioned, Booksmart out there. Booksmart gets a lot of love and appreciation for yeah. being a female-directed film with female leads, but doesn't really get praise a lot for having the LGBTQ side to it. So yes, definitely echoing a
I
lot
love
of
that
what
movie.
Larry said.
I think it was, yeah. it was robbed. I think that movie was robbed, guys.
And then Rachel, which one? Booksmart?
Yes.
Booksmart or Disobedience? Okay.
No, but I was talking about, because we're talking about Booksmart, right? Oh, sorry, yeah. No, you were talking about Disobedience, but sorry, I was just talking about Booksmart. I'm so sorry.
Booksmart. Yeah,
that
was great.
No, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that movie. That movie was great.
And the debut direction, fantastic. Rachel Weisz, though, talk about an LGBTQIA icon. Oh. We love Rachel Weisz over here.
Yes.
Favorite is another amazing LGBTQ-centered film, and Rachel Weisz kills it in that one as well.
And which one?
The Favorite.
My God.
Yeah, I was going to say that, yeah. Speaking of Weisz, yeah.
Yeah, that's another fantastic one. And of course, those three leading ladies all just give such amazing performances.
Yes.
And they work so well together. I think that's really what drives that film. But, oh, so good.
It's so funny. I used to have a crush on Rachel Weisz after The Mummy. Oh, I was in love with her.
I think the world had a crush on Rachel Weisz.
No, I watched The Mummy and I just fell in love with her, and I was planning to be like historian, like librarian. I was like, I'm going to be like her, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I did too. I admit I had a little crush on her too after The Mummy.
I think all the people of the world just really felt fed with The Mummy. You had like Brendan Fraser at his peak hotness, and Rachel Weisz just like this mm-hmm. amazing. I think everybody was just like, whoa.
Yeah, what's happening over there?
I had similar feelings with like The Mask of Zorro with like Antonio Banderas, and then being introduced. That was my introduction to Catherine Zeta-Jones, and just being floored. Like, who is this magnificent creature? Who is she? And how do I get more? But yeah, late 90s, early 2000s, they gave it to both worlds there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And just to piggyback on Antonio Banderas, just recently, Pain and Glory, a great film also, which is a little of Spanish director Pedro Almodóvar. It was a really, really great film, and he certainly deserved his Oscar nomination for that performance.
So, bringing him back in, he was also in Philadelphia, which is historic, pretty impactful LGBTQ-centered film starring Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington. Obviously earned Tom Hanks his first acting Oscar, well-deserved win, but Antonio Banderas, sometimes I forget that he plays the live-in partner, boyfriend of Tom Hanks's character, so.
Yeah.
Nice. And just one quick shout out to Boy Erased from 2018 that I got a chance to watch in the movie theater. And it was not an easy watch with Lucas Hedges and Joel Edgerton, Nicole Kidman, and Russell Crowe. Oh, my God. Russell Crowe gives a great performance. But Lucas Hedges, man, amazing performance. And like I said, it's not an easy watch. Of course, it involves a conversion therapy program. And yeah, it's a great film, but not an easy watch.
I actually have not seen that movie. I think it's on HBO Max. So I will definitely. It was already on my list for a long time. It's just like, it's so hard for me to prepare myself and embrace myself for something emotional. You know how you guys, you know, like how you have like phases, like I have phase on the comedy or and I have phase on horror movies. So I have to just like pick that one phase where I want to watch drama, and then I'll definitely watch that.
I think it's like a sliding scale. I think But I'm a Cheerleader is the like, if you're not having it with deeper films, that one's really fun, but still kind of shows you the horribleness of conversion therapy. And then The Miseducation of Cameron Post, I think, is in the middle. It gets really deep, mm-hmm. but it also has a lot of comedy, and they're, you know, they're fun and kind of living their life. And then I think Boy Erased is probably the heaviest of them. It doesn't have as much levity as either of the other two, so it's like a good sliding scale of conversion therapy.
Well, I know we're talking about the films, but I mean, I recently wrote an article about Lana Winters from American Horror Story, and you know, her character really showcases the brutality of conversion therapy. I wanted to just highlight that.
I'm sorry, which character?
Also, hello.
Which character was that? Sorry.
Oh, sorry. It's Lana Winters from American Horror Story. Oh. She's portrayed by Sarah Paulson.
Oof, yeah.
And so she's a journalist. She's a gay journalist, and she's writing. She's supposed to write a story on this place, this asylum called Briarcliff Manor. Mm-hmm. And so she goes there. She's trying to do the interview with this murderer called Bloody Face. And the person who runs the place, which is the sister Jude, that's played by Jessica Lange, she finds out that she's gay. She's close. She's locking her in the asylum, and she performs first aversion therapy on her, then conversion therapy on her. And actually, Sarah Paulson was talking about how we see the conversion therapy scene in the season of American Horror Story. And she actually was crying in that scene. And we see the aftershocks of the character. And that was actually her being so emotional about that scene. So I know we're talking about the films mostly, but I think that that was a really good season of American Horror Story. And that character is one of my favorite characters. Really amazing.
And that's a great thing because, you know, Sarah Paulson also being a lesbian herself, I like to see, you know, characters played by the actual people, the actual community. So yeah, it's not often, but Portrait of a Lady on Fire, maybe that's why it makes it so fantastic, is because behind the camera and the actresses, you know, they're all part of the LGBTQI community. So maybe it just adds that extra depth and why it resonated certainly with all three of us, but with so many people. And it's still not all that common. You know, in a lot of the films we've spoke about today, it's not too often that we get gay, lesbian, bisexual, trans actors or actresses portraying these roles. So another one that just came to mind, speaking of that, is A Fantastic Woman, which was the Oscar winner for foreign feature. I believe it was 2017. And it follows this trans woman, Daniela Vega. Oh, and she gives such an amazing performance. But that's another one to definitely check out if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I had the opportunity to read the piece you wrote, Sophia. Man, it's very, very thorough and very... I haven't watched the show. I'm not a big... I haven't even watched a lot of these movies. I have no time for television.
Same, girl. Same.
No, so I think Sarah Paulson was actually bisexual because I think she was engaged to a guy before, but I'm not sure. But yeah, no, I actually interviewed her the other day for Awards Watch, and she was so nice, and she was actually talking how much Lana Winters, the character of Lana Winters, means to her. That was really powerful performance. And I mean, I know mostly focusing on that on films, but I mean, that's also worth exploring characters, really impactful.
Yeah.
Thank you for reading my article, Rosa.
Oh, no problem. No, it's really good. So I highly recommend go reading it. I'm just going to go ahead and just randomly ask this question out. Have you guys ever seen yourself personally represented on the big screen? Or if you haven't, have you seen yourself like on any television shows or anything like that? Sophia or Larry, whoever wants to answer. Oh, I can answer this first. I have never seen myself in film as the way I am, a bisexual Chicana. However, the closest character that comes to me is Callie Torres from Grey's Anatomy. Mm-hmm. She is perhaps the first time I ever saw myself as a bisexual Latina on screen. Unfortunately, it's on TV, but I don't think I've ever seen myself on film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm struggling.
That goes back to the discussion we were talking
about before, is, you know, it's a very white dominated subgenre, mm-hmm. as well, like a lot of media subgenres are. And the few times we have gotten leads, particularly of color, most of them, I would say, have been Black characters. So finding Latinx characters, I'm even struggling, mm-hmm. to think of too many of them. Like I said, John Leguizamo was in Tu Wong Fu, but I don't necessarily relate to her all so much in that film. And again, we were also talking about it earlier, biracial is a real problem within the LGBTQ community at large. You kind of get it from both sides of the G's and the L's don't really accept the B as much, and then straight people also don't really accept the B. I feel like if you're a male identifying bisexual, you're just gay and don't want to admit it, and if you're a female bisexual, you're just experimenting and you'll end up with a man. I think that's kind
thank
of
how you perceives
the two different sides of bisexuality. And even when we do see characters in films that kind of display bisexuality, that actually on screen or with men and women, they still get kind of pushed into one category or the next. So it's tough. So I don't think I have.
Oh wow. Sophia?
Well, no, I mean, I think I identify a lot with Lana Wintez because she's gay and she's also a journalist. But I think my problem, my thing is that I don't see a lot of people that are like thicker, you know, like I can't find a person, mm-hmm. in the television that looks like me, you know, I'm talking about the physical appearance. So that's like a lot of struggle for me. But I mean, I think it's a lot of people, you know, like, but yeah.
Yeah, and it's worth talking and it's worth discussing, and I'm so grateful you brought that topic about bisexuals. You have no idea how many misconceptions are out there, and I get asked this every single time. Every time I say I'm bisexual, the first thing I get asked, and this is probably a bit R-rated, but oh, so this means he likes threesomes or something. No, that's not how it is. Yes, and unfortunately there's just these misconceptions, and just like you just said, we're not accepted, and we're not very much accepted. We're not embraced in either the LGBTQ community or in the heterosexual one. And it's tough. It's a bit rough. Therefore, I rarely see myself on TV. And even then, and Kelly Torres from Grey's Anatomy, I mean, I'm in the medical field as well, which is probably more impactful to me. So I'm no surgeon. Trust me, I am not a surgeon, but I'm certainly working in a hospital, working in the medical field. But yeah, she's been perhaps the only person I've ever seen myself on the big on any screen, big or small. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that there is no representation. And perhaps we are the minorities, like the minorities of minorities, people of color and LGBTQ members, and for us women. So yes, it's definitely a subject and a topic worth discussing, because yes, it's unfortunate that I can only name one and you guys just can't, and it's very, very, very disappointing and very upsetting.
I was about to say that I feel like the change is coming. I think this year, 2020, I think it's meant to teach us something, you know, and I feel like maybe that's the year that's gonna change something, you know. I don't know.
I certainly hope so. Like I said, I was glad to see that movie, The Half of It, earlier this year. Although I didn't personally love it as much as so many others have, I was just happy to see, you know, an Asian LGBTQI representation and also behind the camera kind of telling the story, because that's another area that's not really depicted. And Asian women have an entire problem of being subservient, sexualized in media. So it was great to see that on screen. As we know, you know, the Latinx Hispanic communities, I think, have a long way to go when it comes to sexuality still and embracing the LGBTQ community as just in general outside of film and media. And then when it comes to film and media, we're getting Love, Victor, which I'm actually super excited for. Hulu coming up, which Love, Simon, we didn't talk about that. I love that movie. I think it's a wonderful film for younger members of the community to get to see themselves in a high school coming of age setting. But I'm so excited for Love, Victor, because that is a Hispanic Latinx boy and his dealings of kind of coming out. So I'm really excited for that representation. But outside of that, there's not a whole lot for us brown folks. Stephen had three British films he kind of wanted to highlight that changed the UK.
So I've come from behind the mixing desk to join in because it's been such an interesting conversation. Obviously, as a straight middle-aged white man, I see myself on the screen all the time. And I guess that's the point of your question, right? So, that says everything. Really happy that you mentioned the films of Pedro Almodovar. I think he absolutely, I mean, he's a gay man himself. His films, things like Bad Education and The Skin That I Live In, have lots to say about gender and sexuality. Even when it's not so obvious. But I wanted to talk about, obviously, you guys are very much, I think the three of you both, all three of you live in the States, yeah?
That's correct, yeah.
I'm not sure of the sort of the history of legality of homosexuality and things like that. But I grew up, I'm also probably a fair bit older than the rest of you guys, so I kind of have seen both my country and my cinema change within my lifetime. Homosexuality wasn't legalized, well, male homosexuality wasn't legalized in the United Kingdom until 1967. Bizarrely, female homosexuality has never been illegal, because apparently when they were putting those laws in place, which was in the Victorian era, Queen Elizabeth didn't think that was a possibility, that women could like each other. But that might be one of those stories that isn't quite true, just that probably women weren't even considered. Anyway, back in 1961, there's a film called Victim. Victim's important. So it stars Dirk Bogarde. I don't know if you guys know Dirk Bogarde, but he was one of our great actors. He was a closeted homosexual. And what's so amazing about this film, it's probably the first and only time. We have this strange relationship in Britain with homosexual entertainers. We've had, you know, even though he's Irish, you know, he's one of the greats, Oscar Wilde, you know, we've had people like Kenneth Williams. I'm going to name names that you don't understand, but throughout my lifetime and maybe 10, 20 years before, there were lots of, especially men, gay men, that were on our TV screens and on our film screens all the time. We all knew they were gay, but it wasn't spoken about. It was that kind of, you know, not only were they closeted, but we were closeted. You know, the first time we knew Freddie Mercury was gay was the day before he died. And I know that just sounds stupid now, but that's how we were, yeah? Anyway, Dirk Bogarde was a closeted homosexual, and his film Victim, he basically plays a lawyer, successful lawyer. He's married, but he's living a double life. He gets caught up in a blackmail because of his sort of this working class lad that he's having an affair with. It's a good thriller drama, but what's most important is this was the first time we really saw gay people on the screen. This is 1961, and it wasn't going to be legal. It's not even legal to be gay, and even then you've got to be over 21, and there's all sorts of other caveats around it until 1967. So, you know, it's going back in time a bit, but I think that's an important film. And then we move forward a bit, 1985. My country's in is sort of in the throes of a quite a right-wing government under Margaret Thatcher. We have all kinds of issues, and indeed homosexuality and the rights of the homosexuals is probably almost secondary to the race issues. I guess where you guys are going through that now.
It never stopped.
Yeah.
Nope. Stephen Frears' My Beautiful Laundrette, starring most famously Daniel Day-Lewis. Gordon Wanekee, tells the story not only of a gay relationship, but also a cross-racial relationship during 1980s UK. Now, the 1980s UK is a strange place. In some ways, it's all full of yuppies and greed is good and stock market highs and lots of people doing very well for themselves. And it's also a time of great racial tension, of great tension in terms of the gay experience. We obviously had, again, I don't know how it was in the States, but the explosion of AIDS. Yeah. Was the first time, you know, we all got a leaflet through our door. Every household in the United Kingdom got a leaflet through their door talking about AIDS. And it was the first time, and obviously, you know, it was called the gay plague and all sorts of terrible things like that. But the point was, it was the first time that many middle-class white families in the south of England who don't even know a brown person or a black person or a gay person or anything like that, this became part of our lives. And I absolutely see sort of the success of My Beautiful Laundrette as a coming of age for my country, in terms of how we could perceive gay people. There are other films, but My Beautiful Laundrette, I think it got an Oscar nom. It might have even won an Oscar for best screenplay, I think. It obviously brought the world the attention of Daniel Day-Lewis, who's obviously gone on to great things. Mm-hmm. But I just think that's a really important film because it doesn't, you know, you've got things like Mona Lisa and things like that, where it's all a bit of a, I don't know, it that's a bit of a party trick, yeah, and it's paying lip service to many things. But that's a really important film. And finally, I want to talk about Orlando, which is based on Virginia Woolf's novel. Who's it by? It's by Sally Potter, female director. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Orlando, it stars Tilda Swinton, one of our latest national treasures, who plays this. She plays this sort of time traveling person, Orlando, from the court of Queen Elizabeth I through history, but she switches genders. Which is something she's done recently in the Suspiria remake, but she was doing this back in 1992. But it's also full of people. It's got people like Quentin Crisp, who was probably our most famous homosexual in the UK. Sting song, An Englishman in New York, is about Quentin Crisp, and he plays Queen Elizabeth I. Right, so this is 92. You know, we're still struggling. That's out there. Yeah. So Jimmy Somerville, who was the lead singer of Bronski Beat and the Communards, again, a very famous figure in gay activism, not just as an entertainer. He plays a role and does some of the music in it as well. So one of those films is very dark. One of those films is about a change in my country's understanding of the gay scene. I hate words like that because it still seems to put it in a little partition, which is not what I want to do. And the other one is just we don't care anymore. You know, we'll explore these things. And yes, we've also got other people like Derek Jarman, directors like Derek Jarman. But we have a long history of gay people in our entertainment media. And I think that sort of in the 90s and 2000s, we really embraced it. And to which point now, I just don't think, obviously there are lots of issues with, God, what's the word? There are still issues with homophobia, yeah. But I do think in our entertainers, it's just no longer an issue. Yeah, I know. It's really interesting. And I wonder how far ahead the UK is of the States, for example. That was just what I wanted to throw in there.
Yeah.
I'm just fascinated right now. Yeah. I'm like, wow. Okay.
Have I blown you away there with
You have. Oh my God. Yeah, and some of these films are like on HBO Max, I think. Or one of the films is. I think Victim is on HBO Max.
I think so.
I mean, yeah. Victim's a bit darker than the films you guys, you know, you guys have been pretty much going
blabbing about
celebration aspect, especially Larry, and I'm thinking, I've seen all those films, Larry, but they're all very positive and
Yeah,
and I can understand why, Larry. Yeah, you know, it makes sense that you'd glom onto those films, but you know, that there's a darker history here, and we're just lucky there are a handful of films that do show that much darker time, which was dark time for the UK. But it's just, I think it's interesting that we feel that we're coming out of it. Although I am not in that world, I am not experienced in that world. I know people, yeah, obviously, but I don't want to do this. Some of my best friends are gay, because that's just that's the capital C, right? But it is a lot different. I just think it's fascinating how our society has changed within my lifetime. 180 flip-flop, yeah.
Yeah, we were mentioning, just looking at some of the, speaking on the U.S., I think that's why Philadelphia was such a big step for U.S., even though none of the actors were gay, but that was an early 90s film that tackled the AIDS epidemic and prejudice, pretty much, I mean, on the tail end, but we were still kind of reeling from it here in the U.S. because our government refused to even acknowledge its existence and thus let people just die by the masses without even speaking it. And so Philadelphia, to get Tom Hanks, who obviously coming off of the 80s was already a huge star, we had Denzel Washington on his come up, and having those two star in it and really kind of call it out so quick off the heels of it was really impactful. Pretty much the earliest big film was The Boys and the Band for the United States, which came out in the 1970s and attempted to kind of look at what it was like to be gay or bisexual in America. And obviously that was coming right off the heels of the Stonewall Riots of 1969. But yeah, I think the U.S. really took some time to come around to it at large.
I mean, yeah, and, I mean, I was thinking of films like Midnight Cowboy, where it's kind of suggested and it's kind of obvious, but it's not, I don't want to say graphically, but it's not deliberately stated in quite the way it could have been.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I think we have a lot of undertones, or like stars like Marlon Brando, who just never really said much about, but until he just didn't care anymore. There was this time in Marlon Brando's career.
Rock Hudson, yeah.
And I think obviously cross-dressing has long been played as just a joke and like seen as like this ridiculous thing that people do all the way back to way early film. And even still to some point, we have a lot of kind of cross-dressing joke type of things that take place. But I think it's maybe less insidious than it once was. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the other thing I talk about a lot is Asian cinema, and I know a whole nother podcast, but it's just to see how far behind they are. I mean, there is an LGBT scene in Japanese, in Chinese, Korean, well, not really in Korean cinema, but no. Well, a little bit. Handmaiden was an attempt. But it's just interesting to see how it kind of goes around the world. You know, Europe, UK, America. I hope it's a lot far advanced now. Maybe it'll wrap around. But yeah, if you look at like European films, they've been addressing this for so much longer.
Well, and the problem is, you look at something as ridiculous and inconsequential as the split second moments that Disney has been spouting off and putting into their films, and you get even American drive-ins in like Missouri who are like, I refuse to play Beauty and the Beast because of the 1 second dance that takes place between two men. And then Hollywood, you know, is really trying to get the Chinese dollar and trying to get that Asian market down. So they cut out the one scene with the lesbian Cyclops in Onward, which literally took up a second of screen time. So it's still,
the mainland Chinese yuan is going to hold lots of things back, I think, which is why, you know, why we have to look at indie cinema in China as well, funnily enough, where there's quite a big scene, but mainland stuff and therefore Hollywood movies these days. That's going to hold the world back.
That's why I did love Simon, and the fact that they made that mainstream film and pretty much just said, if they're not going to show it, they're not going to show it, but we're gonna release this movie to the masses, and it did well enough. I think it over tripled its budget just barely, so I was like, oh good. Worldwide, yeah. I was glad to see in the market it was able to be released into that people embraced it well enough.
I enjoyed that film, although it's another film with it did a lot of talking but not a lot of showing, which might have been the right thing to do, I'm not gonna say anything, but I have troubles with it, because I thought it was a good film, entertaining film, really important, but I think it maybe sanitized itself just a little bit.
Yeah,
and that's probably why.
I'm loving this. Keep going. I'm just enjoying this. I'm just like loving it and just fascinated and blown away by this.
What's always interesting?
I'm drinking my coffee.
With films like Blue is the Warmest Color or even Boy Erased, having that kind of straight male gaze over the top of them. In one instance, I guess it just kind of shows you what the straight male gaze does to a film when it's there about sexuality. You get Blue is the Warmest Color, which verges on pornography, which hypersexualizes the encounters. And then you get Boy Erased, and it kind of sucks a lot of the intimacy out of it. We don't really get any, you know, we don't even get like a gay kiss, I don't think, in that entire film. There's really no warmth within the homosexuality.
I think you're absolutely right, because the male gaze, and I think one of you was sort of insinuating this earlier, when you were talking about bisexuality, that the male gaze quite likes lesbians. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they fetishize lesbians.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it still feels fear from homosexual men. And I think that is still very prevalent. You know, if I think about lots of I was sort of saying, oh, European films are so great, da da da. But actually, the ones that really make it, the ones that make it internationally, the ones that become part of the our common film language across the world, it does tend to be films with the lesbian aspect rather than the gay male aspect, thinking about it. And I think you're absolutely right. That's all about the prevalence of the heterosexual male gaze, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I hated Blue is the Warmest Color. I do not think it's a great movie. But that's just me.
Well, I don't, because it's 3 hours long, and no film needs to be 3 hours long. But
well, I think the lesbian community at large had a decently negative reaction to Blue. And that kind of just shows you, you know, like, oh,
yeah, exactly.
When the community you've made the film about has a largely negative, at the best, divisive reaction, mm-hmm. then we need to evaluate what went on here and why, again, why it's so important to have someone like Celine Sciamma behind the camera to tell a film that resonated with the community that it was made for.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's where also the Pariah by Dees Rees comes into play. Yeah. And even Professor Martin and the Wonder Woman by Angela Robinson. Yeah, the gays, definitely female gays. And then also if you're from the community, of course, it's going to give it that genuine feel to it. So yeah, absolutely.
All right.
All right. Do I wrap this up or do you want to continue? I don't mind. I've got all day.
I'm
enjoying this.
No, I'm definitely enjoying this. However, I do have to go shopping today. Trust
me. However, what I think is, it's, you know, yeah. it was a brave and big subject for you to take on, Rosa. Possibly we attacked it too wide because I literally think we could have a 6-hour podcast on this. No one's going to listen to that, but I think we should definitely come back to this subject.
Yes.
Dig down some of those areas that we've started talking about, whether it's about countries or politics or purient gazes or whatever. But I think it's definitely a subject that, you know, that this podcast should come back and have a look at a little bit more, especially we've got great guests like these two,
right? guys are amazing.
That was my first podcast, so I was really happy to be here. Happy to talk to you guys. It was so cool. But I just wanted to add something, because I don't think because you're talking about your country, you know, but actually because I live in the States right now, but I was born and raised in Poland, and I just moved to the States like 3 years ago. So you're talking about UK and stuff, but like my country, Poland, that's just like they're going back to the medieval times. But that's the subject that's like so broad, and I'm so upset about my country and the way they approach LGBTQ community that I can't even start on that. But one day maybe we can talk about this one day.
I think that's really important. Yeah, I've talked about this wave coming from Europe, and obviously, Poland is, I suppose, considered Eastern Europe. So.
Oh my God, no! It's bad things are happening there in this country. So I'm kind of happy I met my wife and I moved here. So yeah.
Well done.
And then we don't even get into places like Russia and
how their
laws affect, I mean, more than just cinema, but
Russia, China, even South Korea, Japan, these places are decades, centuries behind where we are, you know, although I do wonder sometimes if there are some places in like Georgia and
a lot of African nations and Middle Eastern nations that are right up there with them.
Absolutely. So the world's got a long way to run yet.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I wrap this up already?
Yeah, go on in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go. Okay. All right. So that's going to about wrap things up for our discussion today. I'd like to thank Larry and Sophia for joining us today. Sophia, can you tell our listeners where can they find you on the internet?
Oh, you guys, you can find me on Twitter mostly, where I mostly tweet and follow and stuff. My handle is TheFilmNerdette altogether. So yeah, follow me, interact with me. My DMs are always open.
Thank you so much for joining me. You are amazing.
Thank you so much.
And Larry, where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, as well as YouTube, all at LC Screen Talk. I am currently in the middle of doing a Pride series on my channel. So every week, at least once a week, I am releasing a review about an LGBTQ-centered film that I haven't discussed before on the channel. Most of the times I have guests on as well. So there's a whole playlist full of past year's Pride Month celebrations, as well as many of the films we talked about today. So there's that.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And yes, please go follow Sophia and Larry. They're amazing and talented and just film geeks. And I couldn't be in better company right now. So if you want to read more about our talented group of writers, please check the episode description for all the normal websites and Twitter links. And if you like what you've heard, please feel free to give us a review on wherever platform you found this podcast. All comments are really, really helpful for us. It helps us improve the show. And if you're listening to us on Anchor, please consider leaving us a little voicemail. Thanks again, Sophia, Larry.
Thank you, so much. Thank you.
You guys are amazing. And thank you guys to our listeners. And I look forward to virtually meeting you all again soon. Stay safe and take care.